Today is Friday, February 25th, and I'm with Michelle Martinez, author of Most Wanted.
Some comments that are made, not quite the, as part of the question.
Okay, I just need to, okay, I know what I'm going to get. Yeah, my comment was that, well, in college I was actually a Latin American studies major, and so, you know, I'm familiar with the political history of Latin America, and I think it's completely and utterly separate and different from being a Latino growing up in the United States. I mean, Latin America has obviously social, economic, and political problems that are very distinct, and people there have much more of a, for example, history of having to deal with political repression and political torture than, you know, and like, you know, death squads and disappearances and coups and, you know, dictatorships that we don't experience here. I think that the issues for Latinos in the United States are much more issues of kind of assimilation, economic equality, and, you know, it's sort of almost an immigrant story rather than the sort of overt politics that you get in the Latin American novel, because people live politics there in a very different way. So I actually think it's great that you're doing this and that these distinctions need to be drawn, because they're very distinct. I was on a panel at VoucherCon about politics in the Latin American novel, and I was kind of a last-minute addition. And really, I was wrong for the panel, you know. Okay, I probably also tell from my accent, Spanish is my second language. So, you know, like many people, my father was born on the island, but he married a Jewish woman who doesn't speak Spanish, and we didn't really speak Spanish at home. So, I mean, I love the language and I know it and I speak it as much as I can, but I'm not a native speaker.
When you were coming through law school, okay, so your undergrad is Latin American studies.
Well, actually, my major was social studies. But I'd say I minored in Latin American studies because you were supposed to develop kind of areas of concentration. And I did joint political theory in Latin American studies. So that was a lot of, you know, history, political science focused on Latin America. But I also took language and literature classes that were focused on Latin America and Spain also. So, you know, I basically read all the greats, whether it's Garcia Lorca or, you know, I mean, I know, they've all flown out of my head now, but the great Latin American writers of, like, the 20th century.
So, it was in undergrad, someplace midway, that you said law school.
Yeah, I think I thought at one point that I might be a journalist, and in high school I was the editor-in-chief of my newspaper, and I thought about that even as I came into college. But during college I got very interested in government. I'd always been interested in that, though. I worked for my local congressman, that type of thing. So I decided to go to law school at some point during college, yes.
And it was at Harvard?
At Harvard. I went to law school at Stanford. I was an undergraduate at Harvard.
Oh, okay. You graduate from law school, you go back home, you get a job as a prosecutor in the federal?
Well, actually, I'm actually from Connecticut, although New York and Connecticut are next door to each other, but I never ended up going back to Connecticut after I left to go to college. And I clerked, it's called, for a federal judge in San Francisco for a year. And then I moved to New York and I worked for a law firm for about 2.5 years. And then I went to the U.S. Attorney's Office. in the Eastern District of New York, which is Brooklyn, Queens, Staten Island, and Long Island. So actually, I don't know if you've read Most Wanted or not, but...
I've read it a lot.
Oh, you did?
I did it at Canada.
Oh, great! So I guess you liked it then and everything? It, yes, no?
How should I say this without groveling?
Oh.
It's one of the few books that I've read, or a few authors, I should say, because there's other authors that I've read where, you know, they're page turners, but this one, you know, I needed to keep on going because someplace in between, I thought, I know who did it. I know who did it.
Who did you think did it?
I thought it the FBI agent.
Uh-huh.
I thought it
was that was deliberate,
him.
Though, you
yeah,
know?
I thought it was him. But, I mean, it wasn't until the end.
But I think a lot of people would have been disappointed if it had been him.
It had been him, yeah.
And then then he's done and he's over, and I just, you know, I love him, so I didn't want him to be over. And he's not over. He comes back in the next book, although not necessarily exactly how you would expect. So, well, I'm so glad you liked it. That really means a lot to me. That's great. Thank you.
As a matter of fact, there was a session. The Southwestern Boys, or the Coyote Song, I think it was yesterday afternoon when I got in. And I got in from the airport and checked in, threw all my stuff in the room, and went to the session because I really wanted to hear the perspective of non-Latino writers writing about Latinos.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And there was some of that there, but not really, because my take on it was that there's authors who are writing with an interest in the geography, and culture kind of happens to play a part in the story. They're not really writing about Latinos.
Mm-hmm.
Which may be good, but it can also work against us in the way that community is represented by someone who's not in the day-to-day or having grown up with it, at least partially. So I got some information from there and some perspectives, but it still kind of leaves me with an unanswered question of, for some folks, why do they choose to write an ethnic character if they're, you know, not from that particular group, or why do men write as women and women as men, you know? So.
Well, you know, I think that came up to some extent at the panel that you went to this morning when S.J. Roseanne was talking, because she writes an Asian character. And, you know, I think people are entitled to write, you know, and I would certainly never say that only a Latino can write a Latino character,
exactly, yeah.
You know. And it's really a question of how much does that writer reach out, how much does that author reach out to understand this community? Maybe the author really knows the community and can write it really well, or, you know, I mean, and, like, to some extent I have to say that I'm only moderately qualified to write. I mean, I didn't have the immigrant experience myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a native Spanish speaker. I watched my father, you know, deal with a lot of those issues, and it's a part of my culture that I value deeply. But I lived it more as a quest for my own identity, and also as kind of an economic and social journey, sort of starting out, you know, with a family that didn't have a lot of money, and then going to some of the schools I went to and what that experience was like. And looking back in my freshman hall, there was me, Roberto Martinez, and Maria Carmona, and we became really good friends. And we were just the three Latinos who happened to be on this hallway, you know. And all of us had major adjustment issues being at Harvard. And Maria's were the most intense, but, you know, we all were depressed, felt excluded, felt like we couldn't compete, we couldn't, like we didn't have the money to have the right clothes, you know. And a lot of that is just kind of, I think, thank you so much. I probably ordered too much food, that's so big. But I think this, those issues are not unique to Latinos either. It's really about the immigrant story and kind of assimilating into this society coming from somewhere else. And I think that obviously also the Latino community is very heterogeneous. It has many different components. And, you know, my experience is not the same as a woman who, yes, your experience, or a woman who comes here today speaking no English from Guatemala and is looking for domestic work, you know, and has three children to support back home. And so, but I, you know, I think it's great when Latinos show up in fiction, especially when they're powerful characters. And I really did feel that there was something of a void for the strong Latino fictional character, although Carolina Garcia Aguilera obviously is doing her part to fill that void before me, but you know, there's not enough out there, so. That's right, exactly.
At what point did you say, you know, I think I'd like to write a novel?
Well, it really came for me as a solution to a problem, because I loved my job, and I really couldn't really bear the thought of giving up my career when I became a mother. But having as intense a career as I did, it got very stressful to juggle. And I actually didn't stop working until 5 years after my first child was born. But those 5 years, every day was just a struggle to kind of keep the balls in the air, you know? And I felt pulled in both directions. It wasn't just that I felt like I wasn't home enough. I felt like I wasn't giving 110% at work. And at the time I actually did end up quitting, I was doing a case involving this very violent gang that had been doing home invasions in Bushwick, which is the neighborhood that I actually had Melanie come from, because I did a lot of cases there, and I felt a real kinship to this neighborhood. And I figured I'd put her in New York, because why get into New Haven, Connecticut, which had its own problems, believe me. But I was working on this case, and I'd been working for a long time towards getting charges brought against these guys, and it finally got to that point. It was literally like 2 years of doing other cases to find witnesses who would be willing to testify against these very brutal killers. And so the case finally, I finally indicted it, and it got assigned to a very tough judge, and it was headed for trial, and the stress was just wrecking my life. Like, I was worried that I wouldn't be able to do what I needed to do at the trial. I mean, it was literally going to be like, the people who did the trial spent 6 months working 14-hour days, like 7 days a week. I mean, it was a really complex case, and I just knew that there wasn't really room in my family life to handle something like that. And so I was having a lot of nightmares at the time, partly because these defendants were so bad, and some of the like murders that happened were so awful. And I dreamed the first scene of this book. I dreamed the Jed Benson murder. It was like a dream that I had while I was having a lot of violent dreams at the time. And so then I was like, this is kind of cool. This would make a cool novel. And coming up with the idea for the book enabled me to leave my job when otherwise I don't think I could have given it up, and I don't know how I would have managed, but I would have forced myself. So then I left and I started working on it. That looks good.
It is. There's a question that I think every author gets asked. You know, as far as parallels, Melanie is young and you're very Melanie-ish.
She's younger than me, though.
Oh, is she? Oh, okay.
Is she just my alter ego? Is that?
To some extent.
I think the answer for her is the same for other characters in the book who might start out or spring from a real-life person, but then totally grow into their own people. And that's really true for Melanie. I mean, certainly she's an alter ego for me, and during the time after I left my job, I really was so upset and unhappy that I had left it behind. And I really put a lot of that emotion into the book. And I remember feeling like, okay, Melanie's doing an investigation, so I'm okay. You know, like I could live it through her. And a lot of what I've done with her is getting to relive a job that it was time for me to leave, but that will always be very close to my heart. So in that sense, she really is an alter ego, but she has very distinct life from me. I mean, she does not have my history, and she has a different child. I never had a daughter. You know, her husband is different from my husband. The apartment is different. You know, everything's different. She's imagined and she takes on a life of her own. So even though she's suggested by me, she's not me.
And there's no Sophie.
There's no Sophie. There's no Dan. I mean, there's one agent that I worked with a lot whose voice I use for Dan. But Dan himself is not that guy. He has a totally different family life, history. He looks different. He, you know, he's different.
Your experiences in law and cases and situations, do they appear in the book? Or did
it's this, again, it's the same thing. Nothing shows up as it was. But real life experience will suggest things that I can extrapolate from. So for example, the murder at the beginning of the book, as I said, was at this time that I was doing a home invasion case. And I had a lot of material at hand about how that crime is done. You know, like, for example, it's normal to use a group of people rather than, like, one person doesn't do it alone. They use certain kinds of weapons. They use certain kinds of handcuffs. You know, they use ski masks. I mean, all of this, yes, I've worked on cases that had those details, but it wasn't the case that's in the book. It's just that I know how a home invasion is done, so I can write one. And, you know, real life finds its way in, but it's still fiction. Experience of reading when you've met the author, it changes the book. And now I tend to read pretty much only people that I've met, because there are, you know, you want to be conversant with the work of the people that you meet, just as a almost like a professional courtesy. So if I'm going to be on a panel with somebody, I'll read their book or, you know, whatever. I really miss reading books where I don't know the author, because there's a certain anonymity to that where you don't have to put the author into the book. Once you know or have met the author, it's hard to read their work without having them be kind of mediating it for you. You know what I'm saying? And it's, you know, that's both that both enhances it, but in a way it kind of detracts from the sheer pleasure of just getting lost in the book, I find.
In yesterday's session, the coyote song.
Mm-hmm. No, unfortunately my flight was delayed so much that I missed the entire day yesterday.
Okay. Actually, I remember referring to you in that when people came up after me or afterwards and said, "You know that Michelle Martinez is going to be make sure that you speak to this new author. She's going to be here." Oh yes, thank you. The session is talking about voice.
Mm-hmm.
And what I brought away from it was, well, the voice of the Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
It ranges from culture and tradition to geography and crime, or the type of crime that's committed. One of the things that I'm still not quite sure of, and I don't have, I can't say with any authority, oh, they're correct or they're wrong, but one of them had said, copycat versions in other parts of the country. And I think she was referring to some beheading. And I thought, well, you know, I know there's been beheadings going on for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, not just in the Southwest, but New Jersey, New York,
right.
You know, Carolinas, Florida, that whole Adam Walsh case. I'm just, crimes against children just start
mm-hmm.
making me feel very sick.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I mean, I don't particularly think that's unique to the Southwest. I do think that being a border region, it's obviously prone to smuggling crimes that have unique types of violence associated with them. So you do tend to see, for example, you know, somebody goes into a house and machine guns five people and it turns out it's drug related. It's not like that doesn't happen in New York, too. It does. But certainly the immigrant smuggling stuff is unique here. Although that's not true either. I mean, I've done just totally scary and weird immigrant smuggling cases in New York involving the Chinese community. You know, I'm sure even as we speak, there are probably thousands of Chinese illegal aliens who are being held captive in Flushing because I mean, maybe it's changed since 9/11, because this was before 9/11, but there's an incredible influx of Chinese illegal immigrants, and they're generally brought in by snakeheads who are the equivalent of the
coyote,
right, and but there's a real history and tradition of really brutalizing the immigrants. And usually what will happen is they'll be held for additional money. And we did these cases where, you know, the snakeheads were calling up the families back in China and torturing the people over the telephone till their relatives gave money to the snakehead's relative from the next village. And this is going on every day. So I guess I just talked myself out of thinking that this was somehow unique to the Southwest. It's not.
To me, it's that type of interpretation of region and culture that bothers me when someone not from the culture is writing about
mm-hmm.
A particular community. One of the best things, and this was one of the things that I mentioned in response to part of this comment was that what was it? Someone had said, well, you know, because of the region, the language, that people will use language in the story, and, you know, how much of it flows and how much of it doesn't flow when a reader has to stop and look up a word, right? Well, what's it mean and mm-hmm. what context and stuff. And my comment was, it's important to have the voices of people like you and Manuel Ramos.
Mm-hmm. And I was very sorry that he's not coming. Isn't that terrible?
But I said, and this new author, I said, this new author, Michelle Martinez, because she can put in a word in Spanish and still have the flow continue. And that's one of the things too that I had given a paper at the regional conference of the National Association of Chicano and Chicana Studies mm-hmm. on the mystery novel. And I guess you have someone who has a familiarity with language and with what it means, where they can use it and they can use it naturally, and it's not detracting from the story at all. And Martinez will use language, she will use the character in a way like Dorothy Umac. I don't know if you're familiar with her story.
No.
A very smart writer, where she has a black Puerto Rican mm-hmm. detective.
I should read her.
She's black, she's female, she's Puerto Rican, but she doesn't use her Puerto Ricanness or her blackness to sell the story. It's basically a young detective who's trying, sort of like Melanie.
Right.
Trying to make it to that next step.
Exactly.
They're committed to the profession and what they think they can do for it, rather than I'm going to get ahead or I'm going to be different or because I'm Puerto Rican. They never use their Puerto Ricanness get in the way of them getting the job done. Whereas there's other authors where it's like, oh God, you know, do us a favor. Don't.
Right.
Don't.
Well, I hear what you're saying, and I think what you're getting at is when it's organic and it just comes out of kind of who the author is, it flows much more naturally than if it's being imposed on the story by somebody who doesn't really live it, you know? And that's why I think part of what I was trying to do is just show somebody who was ambitious, and she's a professional, you know, and like I said, she has a lot of issues with her outsiderness, but she doesn't let it get in the way. And it's just kind of how she experiences life, but it's not, she's not overtly political in any way. And I actually think that's a good thing, because you can bring her to more readers and they won't be put off by that, you know? It's just like, here she is, she can do the job. You know, and that speaks for itself.
Some of the stories that are, well, any story, whether mystery or any other, sometimes is driven for the author by location. Is that true for you too?
Well, yes, in the sense that New York has a tremendous amount of energy and vibrancy, and it also has a lot of crime. And I can't really imagine writing crime novels that were set anywhere else, because that's where I was a prosecutor, so I know how crime happens in that city. I know what the different criminal elements are, which groups are involved in what, and, you know, where the courthouse is and all of that. So in that sense, I'm working with an existing universe, and yes, that will end up putting parameters on the action in my book.
Some authors will give you a city and an area of town, but change the address or the street name. Do you do that?
Well, yes, and I actually have a very interesting story about that, or interesting to me anyway. I was an assistant U.S. attorney in the Eastern District of New York, which covers Brooklyn, Queens, Staten Island, and Long Island. Now, your territorial jurisdiction is not limited to that, because as long as some part of a case happened in your district, you can get what's called venue, so that you can do the case in your district. Now, when I first wrote this book, and it's been through many drafts, Melanie was an assistant U.S. attorney in the Eastern District of New York, and that meant that her office was in Brooklyn Heights, and if she was going to do a case that involved a murder in Manhattan, she needed to find Brooklyn venue in order to do that case. So when I wrote the first book, the first draft, it was technically correct. At the end of the day, she'd go back to her office in Brooklyn. There was a whole discussion of why she had venue over this particular murder case. And people would read it and they'd say, why the hell is she in Brooklyn? Why is there this whole legal discussion here? And it was pretty universal that nobody was interested in having Melanie's office be in Brooklyn. You know, people were like, why does she keep driving back and forth over the Brooklyn Bridge, you know? So I decided that I needed to change that just for narrative purposes, and that authenticity was less important than having the story flow. However, if I wanted to follow reality, I would have made Melanie an assistant U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York, which is where Rudy Giuliani was a prosecutor, where Mary Jo White was a prosecutor, where Martha Stewart was prosecuted. That's the Manhattan Federal Prosecutor's Office. I did not work there. Not only that, but there was a huge rivalry between the two offices. So I said, there's no way I'm making my main character a Southern District assistant. She's gonna be something else. So I created a fictional entity, which is the New York City U.S. Attorney's Office. So now I don't have to worry about Brooklyn versus Manhattan. I don't have to worry about venue. And the New York City U.S. Attorney's Office does not exist. There is Eastern District and Southern District, and they're separate. But, you know, that's just a little heavy for readers to have to wade through, so now I've changed it.
Smart. Are you going back to law?
Probably not, although I say that with some regret. I mean, this is very wonderful, what I'm doing now. And if it continues to go well, I will stick with it. And I think that the process of pursuing it will take, at a minimum, you know, a number of years. I've already been out of the law for 4 years. Can I get a cup of coffee, actually?
Okay.
I don't need more of that. I'd like some coffee. And so it's just, you know, law is a very competitive profession. It changes regularly. You have to keep up with, you know, continuing legal education is required. And I'm not going to be able to do that while I'm pursuing this other career. So I think by the time I would decide that I was done with this, which hopefully won't be for many, many years, it'll be kind of like too late to go back to law. And I loved being a lawyer. I didn't leave because I was tired of it. I left for personal reasons. So I say that with some regret, but I don't really see myself going back.
Do you have any favorite Latina authors?
Latina, well, I mean, there aren't, I probably don't know enough about it. I mean, I think Carolina Garcia Aguilera is wonderful, And so I would put her on my favorites list. And then it's sort of like, who else have I read? I mean, name some people. I mean, I've read Mary Castillo, who writes Latina Chick Lit. Have you read her?
Chick Lit.
Do you know what Maria that is?
Castillo.
It's, she just has a few books coming out now, but I know her because she's a friend of mine through emails.
I know that.
She's an up-and-coming Latina chick lit writer, and chick lit is like, you know, essentially what romance has become.
Okay.
Romance, when it's kind of trendy and urban and has like a cool-looking jacket on the book, is called chick lit.
Oh, okay.
So it's like dating, and you know, but she's terrific. And I would, you know, recommend her, but she doesn't write crime.
What about crime authors? Who have you read and who's your favorite?
Well, I've read, you know, I read a lot of crime authors, and there are so many great ones. I mean, certainly, I'm done. Thank you. Yeah, I just ordered way too much food. Oh, good. I'm so glad you're eating them. Go ahead. Oh, they're delicious. I would have... Believe me, I would have eaten them all if I'd have ordered only that. But okay, so I definitely read Linda Fairstein and Scott Turow, and you know, the prosecutors who write legal thrillers. I read everything from Dennis Lehane to Janet Ivanovich to Lisa Scottolini to what did I read recently? Laura Lippman is wonderful. I love her. I read S.J. Rosen. I mean, I just read Rochelle Critch, is that how you say her name? For the first time, because I was going to be on this panel, and thought her book was wonderful. So, who else have I read recently? I read T. Jefferson Parker's book, California Girl, which was fabulous. I read a lot of people now who I meet. I just read a book by a guy named Robert Heilbrunn, who writes legal thrillers, called Offer of Proof. That was great. And of course I read people like John Grisham and James Patterson. I mean, their earlier stuff is to be emulated. I mean, like, especially John Grisham, but James Patterson too. I recently read, what was his huge, big breakout one? Not Along Came a Spider, maybe? I don't remember. But I read some James Patterson in the last couple of years, and I went, wow, no wonder this guy sells so many books. It was like a complete page-turner. I think Silence of the Lambs is one of the greatest crime novels ever written. There's some Patricia Cornwells that I think are really good, but you know, I read everybody. I read Sue Grafton, she's really fun. And who kind of blows me away? Well, Dennis Lehane is amazing. I read this book by a guy named Dion Meyer, who is not very well known in this country. He's a South African writer, called Heart of the Hunter, that was phenomenal. Man, I'm reading like so much crime fiction these days.
Have you? Have you read any authors that had a Latino or a Latina character just because they had a Latino or a Latina character? And who were they?
Well, no. Although, like, Steve Torres, for example, because I know him, you know, I've read him. I mean, if I hadn't met him and I knew about his books, I probably would have read them anyway, because I'm interested in Puerto Rico, you know. So, yes, but I can't say that I've been seeking out specifically Latino books to read, and maybe I should. I mean, that's probably a good idea. It's just like I'm reading very haphazardly. It's like if I'm going to be meeting somebody, I want to read their book before I meet them, so.
Well, then you may be the norm, because I know a lot of people who are reading the streets at
night. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is by word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
I find that works quite a bit.
Well, and for me, Also, a lot of books are given to me now because being like in sort of in an industry, you know, either I'm coming to conventions and there is a bag stuffed with books, or else my editor or my agent, whenever I see them, they give me books to read. So they'll say, oh, here's some, you know, here's some ARCs of some people that I represent. And so,
what are ARCs?
Advanced reading copies. So like my editor just gave me an Elizabeth George and a Bill Lashner, William Lashner, who's a great guy, who writes legal thrillers set in Philly, that aren't out yet, and I want to read both of them.
So you're writing a novel. I hate my job. No, I'm leaving my job.
I love my job, but I have to leave it.
I have to leave it. And I have all this information, and it can fit into a novel. And then your next step is, I need an agent.
Well, actually, the first step was I have to figure out how to write this in a way that works as narrative and isn't just a recounting of personal anecdotes. Because having the material is not the same thing as writing a suspenseful book. And I don't think I set out knowing how to do that. I mean, I think I really had to work on the draft of Most Wanted a lot before it got into shape to make those pages turn as they did for you, you know? And that's because I think writing is very hard work, and it doesn't just necessarily flow unchecked, you know? So I did a lot of things to get the book into shape before I was in a position to get an agent. And I sought out a lot of input from people whose opinions I trusted, which wasn't necessarily like my mom or my best friend, but people who either were authors or else were serious readers who liked the kind of fiction that I was trying to write. And I probably got about, I don't know, maybe 10 reads of the book over a period of a year or so. And all of that was extremely helpful because I would find that comments were grouped so that people really picked up on the same things. And that could really help you pinpoint where you needed work. And then I also did do a lot of reading in the genre. Tammy Hogue is somebody else who I think is an amazing suspense writer. And actually, I would credit her with reading her helped me figure out how to do kind of misdirection of the reader, because I think she's very good at that, and how to come up with plots that dovetail with the main action and create credible alternative scenarios for what might have happened, and yet they're not what happened. And how do you do that? And like when I first wrote Most Wanted, the whole plot about Jed Benson's law firm was not in there at all. And that made it much more of a straight shot to figuring out who did it, you know. There just wasn't enough going on in the book. And I realized that. I also got that in comments from people. And I happened to be reading a Tammy Hogue book at the time. I think it was Ashes to Ashes, in which there was a really excellent subplot that provided misdirection. And it was like a light bulb going off, you know, like, here's what you do. I need something else. I need a whole different cast of characters that could be the answer, but they're not. And, you know, then you have to create that and everything. But first you have to realize that you need it, you know. So there really was a lot of work to do to get Most Wanted into a shape where I could go out and look for an agent.
And it took you how long?
Well, finding the agent happened really quickly.
And writing from first draft to
when
finding the agent.
Well, that probably took I don't know, a year? But then after I got her, I spent a whole another year working on it. So it took about 2 years. And, you know, she gave me a lot of great feedback, and she also really was very brutally honest at whether she thought it was ready to go out. And
did she also want it together?
Sure, we can. No.
I'll take that.
Okay. No, you can do separate checks. I was happy to do it for you, but whatever. But anyway, so her feeling was that at the time that she first read the book, that it could be sold, but it just could also be better if I was willing to work on it more, in which case it could be more prominent when it came out, you know. And I really felt like you get one shot at this, you know. I mean, you can kind of build slowly over time, but it's better to go out stronger, you know. So I decided that I was very willing to work on it more, and I worked on it for a long time. But then once I felt that the draft was ready and I found her, that happened through MWA. I don't know if I told you that, that I belong to Mystery Writers. Did we talk about that at all?
I think you mentioned it. Uh-huh. Or she mentioned it in the introduction.
Uh-huh. And, well, that's an organization of mystery authors, and they do a tremendous amount of events and networking and panels and symposiums. You know, so I was fortunate enough to have somebody early on say to me, go to this organization and get involved. And that just led to my meeting my agent. And so that's how it all worked out.
You're not a cozy writer.
No.
What are you?
Well, I think of myself as a thriller writer, but I also do focus on my character's personal life to a somewhat unusual extent, I think. And I think I feel that that's somewhat sui generis. You know, I don't really see a lot of other people doing that in this type of book, because there is explicit violence in my books, and so they do have that hard edge, and yet they're very much softened by having this female protagonist who has a home life. So I'm not sure exactly what category that puts me into.